The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby. Just before we jump in, can I give a shout out to a couple people?
Sure.
Yeah, we're...
To some listeners?
New listeners.
Nice.
Yes. First of all, to Nate in Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, we're going worldwide.
Hey, Nate. It's good to know that we at least have one listener. Appreciate it. Hope you enjoy the podcast.
He gave us a really encouragement, and he really enjoyed the podcast. So, yeah, it's. I hope he keeps listening.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
There is some hope up here in the secular land of Canada.
Do you know, I'm always amazed when I meet people, and they're like, hey, I listen to the show. I'm like, that is so encouraging.
Yeah.
It's so nice to know that I'm just not speaking to Steve's face.
We got one other listener, too, my nephew. He's 8 years old.
8 years old.
Yeah. He enjoyed the podcast.
Nice. That might be our youngest listener. Well, I don't know. I wonder if that's our youngest listener. If we have a listener out there that is younger than eight, please let us know. We'll give you a shout out.
So, hey, Isaac, how you doing? And hope you're listening.
Yeah, and I hope you are okay following along.
Well, now you have it. We have two listeners. That's fantastic.
But he has a question for you.
Okay.
All right.
He says, how do you know for sure that God exists? 30 seconds.
Wow. You know, actually, I'll take that question. 30 seconds. This is what I would say. We have addressed the issue in our previous podcasts. And we have some good reasons to believe that God exists. So go check that out at apologeticscanada.com and just listen through our archive.
And as well, I think I've said this before, and it's a good reminder that we define faith as trusting what you have good reason to believe is true. So we would say that there are good reasons to believe that God does exist. And like Steve was saying, in our archive, you'll see lots of good evidence for that.
All right.
Awesome.
Jumping right in then. I saw this article float around Facebook a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week. And this one was from Maclean's. And this author of this article, by the way, I thought it was really interesting because I found this article very respectable. But it's written by the same person over whom we had this outrage a number of months ago. When he wrote his piece on whether Jesus was a historical figure or not.
Some of the worst journalism that I've ever laid eyes on. I don't want to get into that one again. It'll just get me all furious all over again. But I was surprised to find out that this was the same author and that, in fact, he can do good journalism. On a side note, by the way, when Steve and I were in ETS, I think we talked about this on a previous podcast where we gave an update to two scholars that have been addressing the mythicists. We talked about Bart Ehrman and Maurice Casey. Just to remind you of that book that Maurice Casey, he's not a Christian. What he wrote was Jesus, Evidence and Argument, or Mythicist Myths. That's something that that people might be interested in, which further talks about that topic. But I was surprised in reading this article. It was a well-written article, and it brought up a number of good points, especially if you've ever attended a church that is declining or increasing. You always wonder, right? Why is this church declining? And then sometimes you wonder, too, why is this church, you know, growing? But I don't know. Have either of you been to a church that has been in decline?
Yeah. When I was at CBC, one of the things that we had to do in the Worship Arts program was to go attend different churches like masses and things like that to see how different traditions within the Christian community, you know, do their worship, so to speak. So we actually had a chance to go to this Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Vancouver. And I remember walking in there, we actually had a chance to speak with the priest there at the end of the Mass. And he said he wasn't expecting to see such young faces in the pews. In fact, he was talking to a bishop earlier, telling him, reassuring him that he wouldn't see any young faces. And yet there we were. And so we had a really good chat with him, but that was an indicator, I thought.
So are you talking about churches we've attended in decline? I can't say that I have. No, most of the churches were thriving and growing and attracting number of people. So, yeah.
Now, by and large, what would you say when you see a church that's growing? You know, what would you say, oh, man, they must be doing such and such? So I've pastored a number of years, and I can remember being at, you know, at churches that were, you know, slowly inclined. But you'd see these other churches that are just growing rapidly, and you'd be right. Like, man, what are they doing that we're not?
What I've noticed is that the leadership at these churches that are growing quickly, they're really solid. And by solid, I mean they know what it is that they believe, and they're unapologetic about it. They'll put their foot down and say, this is what I believe Scripture teaches, and this is what I'm going to hold to. And in a lot of ways, that's what I see happening here at Northview Community Church, this church that we're based out of. And I find that the leadership is very much like that. Mm-hmm. And they stick to their guns. And I think that is an indicator.
Now, one thing, though, that's going through my mind is I can think of a lot of great pastors and churches all around us and that I know that are doing great work. They're holding to the gospel. And they might be thinking, well, is my church growing or not? Because I'm holding to the gospel. You know what? We haven't even gotten into the article yet.
Yeah. So the article written by Brian Bethune basically said that if you look at all of these churches, for example, in Ontario, Southern Ontario, that are growing, there is this common thread that these churches all hold to very conservative theologies. And those mainline Protestant denominations that are very liberal in their theology, they tend to be in decline.
Now, this was really surprising in the article. People were surprised to see that it was churches that were preaching the gospel, doing so unapologetically, that were holding to traditional Orthodox beliefs, that were holding to the exclusivity of Christianity. That one really surprised me, that these were the churches that were growing. Now, I mean, it shouldn't surprise me, but in fact, that's what is growing.
These two sociologists from Wilfrid Laurier University, they interviewed the congregants and the clergymen and women on a number of issues. And they asked, you know, whether they strongly agreed with these statements. Statements like this. Number one, the beliefs of the Christian faith need to change over time to stay relevant.
This one surprised me because you see, this was interesting, right? Because the clergy of growing churches, none of them agreed with that statement.
Right. 0%.
0%. Whereas you had a 69% of clergy of non-growing churches that believed that statement.
Right. And this is a classic case of, well, are you sticking to your guns or not? Right. And yeah, it seems that the churches that are really, you know, standing solid. And I think in a sense, it really makes a lot of sense out of what's happening, because if you listen to some interviews done with our young people in Canada, the number one thing that they really wish they had was something or someone to believe in. I think I heard Andy Bannister mention that survey a number of times.
Well, and you saw that too when we looked at the Hemorrhaging Faith survey that was done here in Canada.
Right.
This was a theme that came through repeatedly.
Yeah, our young people, our millennials, basically don't want your, as one interviewee put it, you know, your glittering rainbow puppy, you know, kind of gospel. They want something really serious and solid and substantial.
One of the other questions that was on here statements was, God performs miracles in answer to prayer. And so what we saw on that is that clergies of growing churches, 100% of them believed that statement was true, whereas 44% of clergy in non-growing churches held to that statement.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about this too is that whatever the clergy believe, the congregants, they tend to follow pretty closely. So in this case, 100% of the clergy believed that God performed miracles in answer to prayer. whereas 90% of the congregants actually believe that.
And now I think we're all attracted to people that have this deep conviction, right? We want to look and we want to follow somebody that really believes in their heart. And I mean, through these statistics here, it really shows that the leadership in the church matters big time on what they are putting out from the pulpit.
And I think you can see that with, you see examples of that even in dictators, right? You look at guys like Adolf Hitler. I mean, love him or hate him, the guy knew how to move people. And
if you look at too.
Right, if you look at some of his speeches, man, like the guy had conviction, terrible convictions, completely wrong, I think, mm-hmm. but solid convictions nonetheless, and that's attractive.
Well, but to push back on that, you could say that the clergy in these non-growing churches have convictions as well, that they're convicted that God doesn't perform miracles in answer to prayer.
I think there is a difference, though, between positive convictions and negative convictions, because in the case of these clergymen who believe that God performs miracles and things like that, they have positive conviction. And these other clergymen from the declining churches, they tend to be, I don't know how else to put it. Like, these negative convictions don't tend to have that solid...
Same sort of draw?
Momentum, if you will.
And I would probably agree with you that these clergy actually don't have solid convictions in those things, that they're probably waffling on those ideas. Now, what's interesting to me is that the congregants, they also pooled the congregants, and that the congregants, 79% of them believe that God did perform miracles in answer prayer. And so what's interesting to me there is that you've got congregants that aren't holding to the right. clergy's beliefs. And you see the opposite taking place, by the way, with regards to clergy. So you have 100% of clergy saying God does answer miracle prayers and performs miracles, but not 100% of the congregants in those churches actually hold to that. So you can see that these pastors of growing churches are pulling their congregation along, whereas these other pastors of non-growing churches are losing the congregants who in fact don't agree with them.
Right. I mean, these clergies in these statistics are answering this question through this survey or whatever, right? They're not going to take this into their area of work in the church and mention, you know, within the congregants. Like, there's not a conviction there to bring it out and to say there still might be, the difference in percentages, but it's not something that they're going to bring forth daily or weekly at the pulpit.
Well, you do see an absolute commitment to things such as miracles and prayer. But then also another one is, it is very important to encourage non-Christians to become Christians. 100% of pastors of growing churches believe that is the case. Whereas in churches in decline, 50% of the clergy hold to that.
Right. And I think that's really telling, because in these churches that are declining, the general attitude is that Jesus is not the only way. He is one of the many ways, right? This kind of, they bought into this kind of pluralistic view of our world. And in some ways, I think, well, of course you're declining because you don't have that much faith in the one whom you profess faith.
I was thinking that as well, but at the same time, I can't help but feel that it's, and I'm sure you would agree with this, that it's deeper than that, right? Because I think about the word post-truth being word of the year. I think about how tired our culture is of political correctness, of people not saying what they actually believe and hold to, people that are willing to fight for something. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a positive way, that they have beliefs and convictions that they hold to dearly and are invested into. And I get the sense from our culture at large that people are looking for that.
Yeah, and you see that playing out in the political arena as well, right? With the election down in the States, for one. I mean, love him or hate him, Donald Trump really put his foot forward there saying, you know, this is what I want to do and I'm going to do it no matter what. That sort of a gusto, right? A lot of people found that attractive. And then in Ontario, this 19-year-old homeschooled pro-life, pro-family candidate ran and he won this by-election in a landslide, almost 60%. And Sam Osterhoff is his name. And he's the youngest MPP, member of the, I think, provincial parliament is what it's called. And he's the youngest member. And this actually
it blew won. Everyone away.
Exactly. And he won against the leader of the Progressive Conservatives in that riding.
Yeah.
And so that was really shocking.
Here's and he was very clear on what his stance were on abortion, being pro-life, and addressing the sex ed curriculum within Ontario.
Which is really is if you've ever been to Ontario and talked with anyone out there, that sex ed curriculum is very controversial. Uh-huh. And you're right, Terry, this young man basically said, listen, when it comes to family, I am going to be unwavering. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fight for the family. And it was interesting because in the news article, it said this, it says, what this teaches us is that social conservative politicians can win elections by being unapologetic about their pro-life, pro-family beliefs. And I think this surprises a lot of people. Right? Because a lot of people would think, oh, especially in Canada, oh, it's such a secular society. You know, there's no way that you're going to win by holding to conservative beliefs.
Yeah. And that makes me start to think that maybe Canada isn't as secular, as liberal as people say.
I've been arguing that for years, man.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that Canada is not as secular as we think. You know what I would argue? To just jump in here, man.
Yeah.
I would argue, and this is a shout out for everybody listening, this is shout out to all you pastors as well. We have got to encourage more Christians to get into the political arena. We need to encourage them. I think that in many ways, the church has discouraged people from getting into politics. I think it's the politicians that are liberal. I think people are wanting a conservative person, even a 19-year-old, that will fight for their beliefs.
I mean, he ran the race and he won pretty convincingly. Okay. I don't know if you guys seen this. On November 30th, he got sworn in. Uh-huh. And then it was his first media scrum. Is that what they call it?
I have no idea, Terry.
Okay. Media scrum. Let's call it media scrum. So he's surrounded by lots of media people and ask him questions. Some of the first questions that they gave to him, is homosexuality a sin? Right off the bat. Boom. You know? And then, are you homophobe?
Right.
Right? Like, they're after him already.
Yeah. And he actually had to fight through a lot of, like, smear campaign and things like that to even win in this by-election.
I was really surprised of his composure with that going on. Like, there must have been probably 15 people around him, and he just stayed on track.
Could you stay calm at 19?
Yeah.
Could you say that at 19 you could handle that?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, no.
But, you know, if anything, though, I feel bad for this guy. I feel bad that the state of politics is so bad that we need to have 19-year-olds getting in there fighting for conservative beliefs because no one else will.
Nobody else, yeah.
Yeah. And I think just going back to what you were saying earlier too, that, you know, Canada is not as secular as we believe it is. I think that's exactly right. Like, I think what happens is as the elites, like social elites, like the media and the politicians and the university professors, as they sort of put on the pressure on the country, I think that maybe the social conservative voices get dampened, like they more kind of go underground, so to speak. But that doesn't mean that they're all of a sudden liberal, right? They still believe what they believe, but they won't speak up as much because they feel it's not safe to do so. Like, you go to a university campus, you'll see something very similar happening. There are actually a fair number of, you know, conservative students who hold to socially conservative values. It's not that they're not there, but they just don't feel safe enough to speak up.
So here's what the article said is what people are looking for. Looking for answers in accord with traditional Christian orthodoxy, basic articles of faith, the ancient creeds, the authority of Scripture, God's visible working in the world today, the exclusivity of Christianity, Jesus is the door to eternal life, the importance of daily prayer. These were the things that people are looking for. This is what's growing churches. This is what people are looking for in their politicians.
There's a lot of uncertainty in our culture, right? And the world. And I mean, I think this is a time for us as Christians to kind of step up and display our values like that.
Yeah.
You know, that gives comfort.
Yeah. I guess coming from sort of I've been with this Mennonite tradition for a number of years now, and especially in the Anabaptist circles, like the Mennonites and the Amish and all of that stuff, the view towards anything secular, like the politics or things like that, tend to be very negative. Like when Anabaptism was on the rise, you know, Anabaptists actually actively discouraged Christians from becoming politicians and lawyers and things like that. And that mindset has kind of carried on a little
bit,
I think.
Absolutely, it has.
And so I find that within my circle of friends, there is still very much this attitude of leave politics to politicians, right? Leave the culture to itself. We are supposed to live like Christians within that. You know, we don't need to necessarily go out there and try to change the culture from top down, right? And we just want to change people's hearts.
And I would say that it's both. And by the way, I would say it's not just politics as well. We've seen this even with the sciences. Christians need to be inspired and encouraged to go into politics, need to be encouraged to go into the sciences. And I think this is the key, though, that you're talking about, is that they often don't because they're afraid, or they're in those fields, but they don't speak out because they're afraid.
So when we define secular, it's taken the religion out of the public square, pretty much. Is that not a good definition?
Well, it's kind of if you've read Charles Taylor's A Secular Age, you realize that it's
a whole— That's a big book.
That's a big book, so it's obviously a very nuanced question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I used to just hold to the idea that secular is just removing God from culture. I'm now realizing it's a little—
Think about Trinity Western and what's going on there. I mean, they're trying to take any kind of religious belief out of the lawyer position, or, you know, getting a law degree and saying, no, you can't have those beliefs if you work in that kind of public square.
Yeah.
Within our society. So I'd kind of push back on that, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And reason for people to be afraid of voicing their
right.
faith.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I can appreciate that for sure. And that's going to be an issue. I mean, that is part of our culture, that, you know, there are still a lot of people out there that disagree with Christian belief, no doubt about it.
Yeah. I find that what's interesting, though, is that in this sort of whole secularist milieu or whatever, for one, this whole idea of the separation between church and state, that's more of an American thing than it is a Canadian thing. In Canada, there hasn't been that very clear sort of, you know, we're going to separate the church and the state kind of thing. We've kind of imported some of those ideas from the States. And even down in the States, the whole idea behind the separation of church and state was so that the government can't get involved in what the churches are doing, right? But that didn't mean that Christians couldn't bring their values to the political arena. That's or anybody else for that matter. That was not at all the point. The background to that idea of the separation of church and state was something like, we don't want to have in the U.S. what they have, say, in Great Britain, where they have state churches, right? Church of Scotland or Church of England or the Lutheran Church in, say, Sweden, that's their state religion, that sort of thing. So where the government and the church are married like that, they didn't want to have that. And so they said, the government is not going to establish a religion like that. And that was sort of the point, the government not interfering with. And so it actually has nothing to do with whether Christians should bring their values to the political arena. I think we absolutely should, and that is our right as citizens.
And everybody brings their beliefs and values.
Oh yeah, it's impossible not to.
Yes.
But aren't we targeted more so than most?
I would argue yes, absolutely we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Islam is one of the greatest examples of how much Christians are targeted these days. I can't believe how much our secular culture will bend over backwards for Islam and the political correctness of Islam, but then just trample right over Christians. You see this in the news constantly, and it drives me absolutely crazy. But then it reminds me, oh yeah, we're, this is more than just a physical battle. This is more than just some sort of political battle. There is spiritual things that, you know, spiritual forces at play here.
Yeah.
That remind me, oh, you know what? This is just further proof of the truthfulness of Christianity. I mean, you should expect it.
I think this might be a good place to start wrapping up what we're talking about here. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up before we closed?
Yeah, there was an aspect of the article that was brought up that I just wanted to quickly talk on. Sociologists who study religion debate whether the decline in church attendance is a matter of demand, fewer moderns want it, or a matter of supply, with would-be Christians not finding the faith they want. And I think what we're seeing here is that this is sadly a problem of supply, that there in fact is demand for this. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I pray that we would see more Christians getting involved. We would see more pastors unapologetically holding to traditional Christian beliefs. And we shouldn't be surprised to see the church grow in the midst of that.
Yeah, I guess just wanted to put a caution out there, right? If you're a Christian or if you lead a Christian church somewhere locally, what we're seeing through this article too is that if you try to fit into the culture by compromising what you believe in so that you start to look more like the culture, the church will start declining because there's nothing that separates you from the culture. So after all, why go to the church to get what you can just get from the culture directly?
That's a great point. And by the way, I think it's also just important for people to understand the numbers we're talking about here. Just for clarity, when we're talking about a growing church, it's often you think about those mega churches. This isn't what the article's talking about. It's talking about churches that are growing by 2% a year. And we see that churches can average often 5%, I think you were saying, Steve?
Yeah, or more.
And I've definitely seen many churches that average far more than 5%. That's the kind of growth that we're talking about here. And that's also the type of decline we're talking about here too. We're not talking about these massive jumps or these massive declines. We're saying, over time, what's that trend looking like? And so that's what we're talking about.
I guess there's a danger too in looking at the numbers and just, our church is growing, that shows something in our church. But with this article, it's specifically saying Orthodox beliefs, right? It's saying they're laying down absolutely the core of Christianity. And I mean, that's encouraging.
I think it's good then to end our podcast with Romans chapter 1. As I was reading the article, I kept thinking about verse 16 that says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes."
Preach it, bro. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us this week. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll see you next week with more to think about.